Hello, friends. Welcome to Happy Healthy Human Radio. I'm your host, Samantha Attard, coming at you from the beautiful Washington, D.C. I'm an Ayurvedic coach, yoga instructor, and doula, sharing with you all the things I am learning about and teaching about in my everyday so that we can all find just a little more balance, bliss, and confidence. I so truly appreciate you being a part of this community, and if you do enjoy this podcast, please do subscribe. You could also rate and leave a review over on Apple Podcasts. That helps more people find this podcast, and I truly appreciate it. Or even better, if you want to be like so super cool, you could share this podcast with a friend, or even, which is relevant to our conversation today, like, you know, hang out offline and chat about this podcast with your friend. How fun would that be? Because today we have a really wonderful guest. We have Attara Bernstein joining us, and we have an amazing, amazing, amazing conversation about food, about social justice, about finding success within yourself, self-care, and just showing up and being a good human in the world. It's a really beautiful and amazing conversation. You might know Attara because she is the co-founder of Pineapple Collaborative, which is a platform for women to explore their style, identity, and values through food. It has a growing community of 100,000 plus women across the country. Attara's work has been featured in Forbes, NPR, Thrillist, and Refinery 29. Attara has prior experience in social impact, environmental justice, design and brand consulting, and photography. She graduated summa cum laude from the University of Maryland and the Fashion Institute of Technology. Basically, this chica is a powerhouse, and her work through Pineapple Collaborative has made huge waves across the country. Pineapple Collaborative has offline events in New York, DC, San Francisco, and LA, including a little meetup that they all just did in Paris, which is so neat. And it's really been a beautiful community. They started here in DC, and it's been a really beautiful community for fostering connection and collaboration between people in the food world and people that you just love food. It's a really amazing community with an amazing mission, and I've always loved and enjoyed my conversations with Attara because she is such a thoughtful, holistic thinker. And you're going to hear, even from our conversation today, she cares, of course, a ton about food, but it's not just about food. It's also about the greater world around us, our relationship with others, the social, political, climate impacts of our world. And as such, she really brings a beautiful breadth and depth of knowledge to everything she says. You can tell she's a very thoughtful speaker, and I really loved this conversation. Like I mentioned, we talk about so many different topics, and it's a really beautiful conversation that I hope you learn from and enjoy. If you are interested in learning more about Attara and Pineapple, please go to pineapplecollaborative.com. They're also over on Instagram at Pineapple Collaborative. Thanks so much. Enjoy this conversation and have a wonderful day. Hi, Attara. How are you doing?
I'm doing really great. This is such a cool technology.
Isn't it amazing? I think it was the thing, Anchor was the thing that made me actually start a podcast, because before that it was all too overwhelming to figure out how to do it and how to record and how to upload and all that stuff. And they made it so easy. And so I'm just very, very grateful that it exists.
Oh, hashtag not sponsored, but that is
No, they're definitely not sponsoring me.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your podcast, Sam. I'm so honored to be here.
Well, it's like twofold. I'll have to admit I have two motivations, because one is obviously you're just a fabulous and wonderful person and you'd be super interesting to talk with. And I think everyone would love to hear from you, because mostly everyone that I know knows Pineapple Collaborative and is interested in pineapple and is interested in food and all of the things you work on. But then also you moved to Baltimore, and so I need excuses to talk to you.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to talk about pineapple. It's definitely, you know, at the epicenter of my life, for better or for worse sometimes. And yeah, it's been quite a journey. So excited to talk about it.
Awesome. Well, I want to start first with a piece. I don't think it was too pineapple related, though I saw a little bit about it on your Instagram. But I want to hear about your trip to Italy.
Yeah, my trip to Italy was amazing. I don't know if like you can come back, from a trip to Italy and not say that. It is just like really a very special country. And I actually traveled with two of my best friends who I've known since I was like literally in pre-K,
Oh
probably since we were like three or four. So we've known each other for a really long time, and this is our first time traveling abroad together. And so that was a really cool experience. I also got to visit Sicily for the first time. I had been to mainland Italy before, but this is my first time in Sicily, and it's a super interesting region of Italy. It's really like it's like the food hub of Italy. It's where all the agriculture happens, especially the produce. And so it was really cool learning about the food in Sicily. And I think it was also a little bit bittersweet. I traveled a bit up north before going to Sicily. I was in Modena and Parma and Milan,
yeah.
and I definitely conversations with people up north who are politically challenging. A lot of like a lot of populists and nationalists in northern Italy, and so that was kind of like jarring to see. So I couldn't escape the politics, unfortunately, but it was still a really fantastic trip overall.
Wow, that is super fascinating. And it's kind of funny, like I think, we get so obsessed with, our own nation's politics, and you kind of like forget, like in all of these other places, oh, they're dealing with the same things and the same questions and issues and conversations. They always have a different flavor for sure, but there is, I mean, they're fighting some of the exact same fights and all of the work with refugees and basically who has to take care of them. I mean, it's awful. And the conversation, some of the conversations that are happening in, I know, Italy and Malta, and like basically trying to pass refugees up to northern countries. And so it's really hard. It's very, very hard.
Yeah, it is really upsetting when you realize also that the challenges that refugees and immigrants have in this country, it's not limited to this country, to your point. And it's just it's very harrowing to see, to really feel that all of the crises that are happening in Europe. And so, yeah, that was upsetting. I was like with a taxi driver who was kind of blaming the country's problems on immigrants, and so that was very upsetting to hear.
Yeah, that is hard. I was kind of curious because, again, from what we see in proof again that Instagram is a highlight reel, right? I'm like, weren't you just eating? Like, weren't you just having a grand old time? Like, how did you even get involved with this? But
Yeah. It was mostly a highlight reel, I would say. But I'm someone who I'm a very kind of like introspective and self-aware person. And so this like one, 10-minute cab ride, I was really thinking about it for the whole trip. So that's why I bring it up. But yeah, of course the food was amazing. I mean, that goes without saying.
I mean, I guess I'll just say, since you're thinking about it for the whole trip, has it changed anything or made you think differently about what's happening in the US? Or I don't know, has it sparked any action or new thoughts in you?
I think they were mostly confirmation thoughts, of, mostly realizing that, everything that is happening in Europe is like real, and this like nationalist uprising is very dangerous. It hasn't per se sparked action in me, more than just really realizing that like we need change in this country and beyond, and we need a leader that can really unify this country. yeah, we'll see what unfolds. It's going to be a long year and a half. but yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, and I love this. And, you know, just to like underline, we don't even have to dive that much into it at this moment, but it's something that I really hold near and dear. And I don't think everyone in food, and especially, I'll say, especially in like kind of a health wellnessy world, don't always, and I know that you do, what's the word I'm looking for? Make the connection between our food world and our like, and our health, of course, but like what we're eating and also the political, social, environmental implications of that. And that it's so not in a vacuum. It's one of the things that really drew me to food in the first place was I was like, oh my God, it's involved in everything. Like it's, you can't get away from it if you're thinking about how our world works. It sounds like that might have been also a draw for you, or you know, were you kind of interested in food first, or more political, environmental, social justice first? Like where did those fit together for you?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And before I tell you a little bit about my background, I just want to like, I totally agree with you that food is really at the epicenter of all of these major issues that we hear politicians talk about, from healthcare to climate change to immigrant issues. And, you know, I think we all come to food very organically as humans. And I believe that all humans love food and have a connection to food, or at least most humans do. And I think for me, at least, it has evolved to being this platform for which to express my style, identity, and my values. It's the lens with which I see so many different things in my life, politics being one of them. But I grew up around food. I come from a Jewish Orthodox family. Which means that we celebrated Shabbat, the Sabbath, every weekend. We had these like massive, elaborate dinners and lunches with family. I always used to joke that like growing up, Thanksgiving was like not a big deal for my family at all, because we had Thanksgiving dinner every Friday night. Like we had a massive, massive meal every Friday night. But I spent a lot of time around my mom in the kitchen. From when I was like old enough to hold a knife, basically, just kind of learning that she was handed down from her mother and grandmother, learning those recipes and learning how to cook. I don't have any formal training or anything, but I was really just by osmosis spending time with my mother and learning about the heritage of our food and our family. And so that was very formative for me. In high school, I became very socially aware. I hung out with a bunch of democratic socialists, which was very formative in like the way that I think about politics now. I spent a lot of time volunteering for an organization in Baltimore. Well, it's actually nationwide, but I spent time at a chapter in Baltimore with Food Not Bombs. And we would cook and prepare meals for the homeless population in Baltimore and serve them and eat with them. And so that was a really cool experience as well. Not only, you know, donating my time, but also just learning about how food can really like nourish a community and serve as a point for connection with a community that I would have not had, you know, any reason to really be with. Mm-hmm. So that was, definitely another point in my life where I knew I wanted to get involved with social justice and food. Simultaneously, I was really becoming interested in the arts, and I took a class at Maryland Institute College for Art, MICA, in Baltimore, where I learned all about photography, and I just really loved that medium. And so I spent my high school career basically like cooking and taking photos.
And that's so amazing.
Yeah, it was really fun. And my parents were so supportive. I feel really lucky.
That's what I was going to ask. I was like, hold on a second. How did you get away with that? That sounds amazing.
They really encouraged me to explore. And I went to a high school also that didn't really have such a great arts focus. So I think they really wanted me to like tap into whatever was really like lighting me up. And so, yeah, after high school, I spent a year in Jerusalem. I went to an art school there, and it was kind of like a gap year experience. I took a few credits in photography, and was also studying like Judaic studies. And then I came back to the U.S. and I went to art school. But yeah, I mean, to make a long story short, because this is now getting into a long story. But essentially, I was really at art school back in New York. I was really missing the element of my life that tapped into social justice and especially climate justice. And I really wanted to work in the environmental field. And so after I graduated from art school, I got a second environmental science and food justice, which all kind of led me to where I am today. It's a combination of how I grew up with my family, my education, and my social justice interests.
That is super beautiful. And I love, you know, especially like listening to the beginning of your story, like it so hits home from my Italian family, where just life kind of just revolves a lot around food, or like it, for us, it wasn't Shabbat. It was like a Sunday afternoon lunchy dinner thing that went for hours. And like, it just was, there was just so much conversation around food, and it just, you're like, same deal. Like Thanksgiving doesn't look all that different than what we had on Sunday. We just like might make an extra turkey just to like, you know, wave our hands and say, here you go. Here we have
got turkey. Yes.
And you know what it makes me think of though? And I wonder if you feel this way at all. Because in college, when I was taking one of my food courses, you know, a teacher, we were talking about Michael Pollan and how some people kind of get a little anti-Michael Pollan because it can sound like he's basically blaming women for not cooking anymore. women not teaching their children how to cook anymore. And I guess I wonder, you know, given that you can take this very like holistic view of things, I don't know, like, is it, you know, America's fault for not cooking anymore? Or is there a way that we can keep reviving food traditions without it feeling like, okay, ladies, now you have to do a lot of work?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard that argument before? Was this like just a weird radical New York thing that we were talking about? Or?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I hadn't actually made the connection between Michael Pollan and blaming women for not cooking anymore. Yeah. I obviously don't think like women are to blame for not cooking anymore. And I also don't necessarily think it's true that women don't cook anymore. Yeah. And I think the whole topic of like women cook is like highly problematic, obviously. But yeah, I mean, I think that like we all need to find the joy in food again, whatever that means to you. I think that there are that kind of opens like a lot of conversations from sustainability to just like having a spiritual connection with our food and our land. You know, I think that a lot of people our age who live in a certain area, you know, like I guess like urban dwellers are definitely eating a lot of convenience food. Myself included. And I think for me, and I don't want to kind of speak for everyone, but what I find troubling about that is the fact that there's like so much packaging that's involved, and the fact that obviously it's expensive. And then I also just like want in my own life to really feel more connected to like the land that nourishes me. And I think the experience of like going to a farmer's market, if you have the privilege to be able to do that, and like talking to a farmer, making a relationship, asking how your beans grew, buying them, planting them in a meal, you know, there's something that is so much more like spiritually connected versus like going to a fast casual. So I like to practice that kind of ritual of being connected to my food. But yeah, necessarily how all women are interacting with their food. I do think that, like cookbooks like Dining In by Alison Roman are really making cooking like sexy again, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
I don't think she like set out to do that, but I really think that that is like a major outcome of her book, which is like, you know, she makes these like highly approachable, delicious recipes that are meant for entertaining, and it's really like causing this revolution in food and making cooking easy and cool and fun. And I think that's awesome.
That is super neat. And I love that little piece, which I kind of, I know of her cookbook. I don't own it. But the point of it also being for entertaining, because I think that's the part, like, I know my husband and I, we love to cook. Like we do, but you know, every once in a while, if we're like, oh, we're having people over, then it's like that conversation of, well, okay, so what can we make for a crowd? Okay, what's this here? Like, should we just order a pizza instead? Like, you know, like a nice pizza, but a pizza, you know,
yeah.
Is there actually, or like, would it just be easier to exactly just eat out because you know what, it's Thursday night and we don't want to do X, Y, or Z. But so I also, I love that piece because I know, you know, after years of like cooking in college just for myself, even going from one to two people, I'm like, how much food do you make for two people? And if it's like four or eight, I'm just like, I make like pounds of pasta. Like, you know.
Oh, totally. I am always afraid of running out of food. I definitely learned from my mother, and she probably learned from her mother. So I get that. And honestly, I don't think there's anything wrong with like ordering a pizza when you're entertaining. I think that is like great. I love to order pizza, and I'll like make a salad, you know? So I'll like kind of do the half kind of cooking, half like getting help from somewhere else. I think that's great, especially if it like encourages you to entertain and to like share a meal with others. I think that's like a really beautiful thing. So I'm definitely not knocking that, but I'm just kind of musing on the things I've been, you know, thinking about lately as it relates to food and cooking.
Yeah, well, and I completely agree with you. And I think, you know, the part where I'm thinking about it is, you know, when are we dining out because we don't think or know that there's another option, mm-hmm. versus when is it like intentionally done, like, oh, I'm going to order a pizza and make a salad, like that. When it's done kind of intentionally, I think that's a different thing than when you like, I don't know any other way to do it. I can't think of anything else to do.
Right.
And just speaking to everything you're talking about in terms of connection with food, I mean, this is 100% Ayurveda. And I actually have one of my Ayurvedic teachers, she literally carries around like a little like spice jar. And she'll like, you know, let's say she's, you know, eating at Sweetgreen because, you know, it's busy New York City lady. Like she will, you know, just put some of her own little like homemade spice mix on whatever she's eating from Sweetgreen to kind of add just a little bit of homemade or a little bit of connection more with that food. In addition to, she says, you know, always just be really nice to the people that are making and serving you your food. Like if you can't, if you're not making it yourself, if you don't know who the farmer is, like at least be really present and and kind to the people that are serving you. And I'm like, those are some pretty good ways to feel a little more connection, you know, especially if you have like your regular fast casual spot that you go to day after day after day or week after week after week. You probably recognize some of those people by now. So what's wrong with learning their name, you know?
I love that so much. And these people are extremely hardworking. So I think like beyond having a need for yourself to like feel a connection, like I think like we owe it to these people who work really hard to be like decent and kind. So I love that. But I think that is a really good way of like fostering connection, even in a environment that maybe like doesn't offer that. But yeah, I mean, I think also like our world of like always being online and always being reachable and overworking, like I think that does lend itself to relying on, you know, fast casuals and like eating out because people just don't have the time. Mm-hmm. And that is really my biggest struggle is like making sure I am like carving out time to cook. I think a lot of the pineapple team can attest to the fact that I will like set up my computer on my Vitamix like while I'm in the kitchen, and I'm like taking a call while I'm cooking because it's really important to me. But I know that not everyone has that luxury, and it's really hard when you're working really, you know, when you're working hard, you're working more hours than you would like, and now you have to cook. I mean, it's a lot of responsibility and a lot of time.
Oh, completely. Yeah. And I mean, I think of so many pieces of this because it's great, you know, for someone that I mostly work from home, but yeah, yesterday I was like, nope, I actually don't have time to make lunch. And I'm like, I whipped myself up like a smoothie or something because I couldn't figure out how to like turn my oven on. Like, actually, I need something that I can make and consume in 6 minutes. And what would it be like if I actually had a 45-minute commute? You know, like how would that change things?
Right.
So I think it is really hard. And I know personally, I'm trying very hard to make those times and to notice. And it is kind of fascinating, right? Like when we actually do the math of, hey, how much time have you spent on Instagram or Facebook today? And it seems like these little micro moments, like, oh, it was like 30 seconds and then I put it down. But if you compound that over the course of a day, it's like, actually, you just found the 25 minutes that you needed to make lentils. Sorry.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah. I mean, going back to your original question, Sam, of like, are women cooking less than they used to? Probably. But I also don't think it's like our fault at all that this is happening. And I think we have to look at the whole system from the fact that we have less time. And then when you think about women who are single parenting and they're working two jobs, like how is it possible that they can also cook for their families? I mean, it's just, I think it's a very fraught system that we have. And, you know, to your point about social media, like even if you are spending hours on social media and that's why you can't cook, I don't even think it's our fault. Like, I think these apps are like built to capture our attention in a way that like exploits us. And so, yeah, I think it's a big question that is, you know, it's worth having a conversation over. But I think my philosophy on life really is that everyone needs to just do what works well for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good way to go, because really, what else is there, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's super beautiful. I can't decide if there's a question in here, but it's kind of been like niggling at the back of my brain, so I'm gonna like bring it out there. I think it's really interesting what you said about using food as a way to like show your, to display your style, your identity, who you are. And I guess I wanted to like throw out there also like that reminder and that, and just like what you just said is different things work for different people of like, and that doesn't mean everyone has to eat like you or everyone has to do it exactly the same way as you. Cause I think that's another piece, especially with food, it comes up a lot. Like, I'm not going to like use this podcast to try to make you become a vegan. Like, no, that's not really what I'm into. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, kind of where I've landed in what I'm doing right now in my life as it stands. I guess, do you want to speak to that at all? Is there anything that makes you think of, and I don't know, maybe you and Ariel even make really different decisions, even though you're so aligned on many things, or just anything else that comes to brain for you on, in terms of displaying our style and identity for our food, but also the fact that that's going to look different on people, and that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really, it's something we think about a lot at Pineapple. I mean, we are decidedly not a wellness community. Yeah. We are not a community that like is into diet culture at all, or we don't, to your point, we don't like stand for veganism or like paleo. We're not like, we don't subscribe to like a specific diet. I think actually it's pretty much the opposite, or really what we're trying to do is celebrate how you know, every individual woman has food in her life. Mm-hmm. I think, let's see, I'm trying to figure out how to structure this response. I think for us, what we are paying more attention to is, like, how do women use food as a way to express themselves? Mm-hmm. For some women, it may be in how they think about their family. I mean, I think that's been, like, a very kind of salient reason why I love food so much is because I, you know, it connects me to my family and my heritage, and my family talk about food from the old country. And my grandfather always talks about this, like, famous potato kugel that his mother used to make that she brought directly from Poland, and the recipe is now lost. And we always kind of imagine to ourselves what this potato kugel must have been like.
Oh my gosh.
And so yeah, I mean, that's how food plays a role in my own life. But, you know, in our content, in our blog, Pine 4 Pantry, which is our editorial where we peek into the kitchens of women we admire, we're always kind of looking for these moments and these stories where women are talking about food as an expression of their style and their values and their identity. We're going to be releasing a Pine 4 Pantry on Thursday. This is a sneak peek for all of you listeners out there. We're doing a Pine 4 Pantry with Hawa Hassan, who is a Somalian woman in New York who makes this, like, special Somalian sauces called basbas. And so that was a really interesting write-up for us to edit through, because she was telling stories of how she grew up in Somalia and being really inspired by spices along the coast of the Indian Ocean. And I think for so many of us, food is, like, how is our collective memory, but it's also our future. It's how we move forward in the world. It's how we make decisions. It's how we kind of foster our identity. And so that's really what we're interested in at Pineapple.
I love that. That's so cool. Like, that's so beautiful. And you're getting at exactly that point of, like, of course, everyone's values are not going to 100% align, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And it's just, what does it mean and look like for you? So I think that's so, so beautiful. So one last Pineapple question. Thank you for our sneak peek. I'm excited for that Pine 4 Pantry. But is there anything else super fun or cool or exciting coming up with Pineapple that you want to share or want to mention? Or are you just kind of keeping on with your awesome events? I know you're in LA, DC, New York, and you just did one in Paris. Ariel just did that. So neat.
Yeah. So we're also in San Francisco. So we have event chapters in four cities, DC, New York, San Francisco, and LA. And we actually have two events that are live right now where there are still tickets available, which is kind of a novelty because our events usually sell out within 24 hours. But if you are listening and you're in LA, we have an amazing event coming up on July 23rd, all about women of color in food and film. We have a marketing person from Netflix who's going to be there. We have a chef, Naisha Arrington. We have someone from BuzzFeed Tasty who will be there. And then it's going to be moderated by the LA Times cooking editor. So please come. It's called Watch Your Mouth. And you can get tickets by going to our website. And then if you're in DC, we have another event coming up all about leading women in ice cream in DC.
That's so cool. That's so fun.
And yeah, and it's going to be all about how these women tell their own stories and their heritage through the flavors of their ice cream. So it's a very kind of pineapple-y way of viewing ice cream. But that's happening also on July 3rd in DC, and grab your tickets by going to our website. It's pineapplecollaborative.com. And then as far as other things coming up for Pineapple, I mean, we're going to be releasing a lot of really great content this summer. So we have our blog Pine 4 Pantry, which I mentioned earlier. It's all about women in their kitchens, and we have a bunch of really great features coming up. We have a few really great events coming up across the country, so make sure to tune in there. And then, yeah, we just are continuing to, you know, continuing to release really great content on Instagram. So follow us there. It's Pineapple Collaborative on Instagram. We'd love for you to be a part of what we're doing. And you can also sign up for our newsletter by going to pineapplecollaborative.com/join.
It is so amazing what you guys are doing. And the events are awesome and fun. And you're always bringing in such new and interesting people and just amazing people that you wouldn't know of otherwise, or just wouldn't know their story otherwise. I think, they've been kind of game changer. I don't want to say game changer, but like huge, like, whoa, like interesting. Like, oh my gosh, about that person or that person's story, or thinking about how I run my business in a new way. Like that's for some of the conversations, like I'm particularly thinking about the owners of Baked and Wired, and even the wellness panel meeting Rochelle Robinette, who does amazing herbalism work. It's just been like, I've been very grateful for the people I've met and found out about through your work. So that's so cool.
Thank you, Sam. That's so nice to hear. That's very flattering. You know, we're definitely, I can speak a little bit briefly about like where Pineapple came from, but Pineapple started, my co-founder Arielle Pasternak started Pineapple when she was, she had just moved from New York to DC and was meeting all of these amazing women who didn't know each other. Yeah. So she just like saw a need to connect women who cared about food. And so she had a potluck dinner, and the whole idea of Pineapple really spun out of this initial potluck. And so while we have lots of really great digital content, we are at our core a like in real life kind of community and brand. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really different from a lot of the other kind of communities that you see online, because like we have such a focus of actually getting together off of our computers and our phones and actually like fostering connections and being in a room together, which is like kind of a radical idea in this day and age. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that said, come to our events if you're listening. We would love to see you and meet you in person.
And I guess like the last thing I'll say is also it's very accessible. So it's not like you can only come if you're a famous chef and that's the only reason why you're allowed to come to the event. It's like, no, just if you like food, come. So that's also feels really different. It doesn't feel like some crazy exclusive club that you need to be specially picked to come to. And that's also really, really nice.
Yeah, we're definitely not an industry group. We're really a group for all women, all people, because men are allowed to come too, and anywhere in between. But we're for anyone who loves food. And if that is you, then you belong in the room. And so that's really our philosophy. Yeah.
That's amazing. I know. I've been to a few events where your husband's the only man in the room and it's enjoyable.
Yeah. It's happened more than once. Yeah.
It's good. But people do. Anyone is welcome. That's also another beautiful thing. Oh my gosh. So, you know, given that you're doing this whole, you know, co-founder thing, you've got a lot of things going on. Well, I'm actually kind of curious. I was going to ask about work-life balance, but I actually want to know, you know, how has it changed now that you're semi-ish long distance from Arielle? I believe Arielle's still in D.C., correct?
Yes, Arielle's still in D.C. She's actually in Paris right now on vacation. In France, rather, not in Paris. But, the work-life balance thing, I'm still kind of figuring it out. Like you mentioned, I moved back to Baltimore about 6 months ago. And, you know, it hasn't been the easiest transition. I think mainly because, like, I don't have, like, such a strong network here. I have my family. My family lives in Baltimore, so that's been really nice. But what I was giving up, you know, in D.C. was really, like, a group of friends. Like, that, it's as simple as that. Like, a group of seven really good friends. Not to mention, like, you know, friends that I would see every so often and acquaintances and really just, like, knowing a lot of people, feeling a sense of community. going to the farmer's market and bumping into you, Sam, or bumping into, you know, my friend Tanya, my friend Maddie, and really not feeling that in Baltimore. And that's been like, it's been harder than I thought it would be. I think I'm really seeing the value of like having a close group of friends nearby. So that's been challenging. I did get a dog about 6 months ago, right when we moved to Baltimore. So that's been really great for my mental health, because she, you know, forces me to like get out of the house and take her on walks, and she just like stares into my eyes, and I like am obsessed with her. That's been really, really nice. But yeah, I think as far as like work-life balance goes, I think I'm still trying to figure that out. I mean, Pineapple, we're very, very focused on boundaries and making sure that everyone on the team like communicates when they need a break or when they're going to be offline. We try to not like Slack or text on the weekends. Arielle and I do still, but usually it's not about work. It's like about like, oh, did you see this like awesome woman who wrote this article? And, you know, kind of more sending each other like inspo. But we're also really big on, you know, actively communicating when things are too much. We are big on like working smart, not working hard. So really making sure that we're like prioritizing together. I definitely don't want to paint the picture that we have it all figured out. We're really aiming for progress and not perfection in all areas of the business. But we do, you know, prioritize our team's mental health and make sure that people have time to do everything that they want to do. And yeah, it's exciting to be able to like lead a company and like set that example from the top down. I've definitely worked in places where like, you know, that was not the culture. The culture was like work as much as you can. And there was a glorification of like working 70, 80 hours a week. I think we've all been there, and it's just like not something that I think is sustainable or like ethical in any way.
That's super amazing. And yeah, it is fascinating how, you know, even you're like, oh, Baltimore, it's just like 50 minutes away. And, you know, Atari, you know, like all these people in Baltimore, don't you like between all of your, I mean, because you guys have you done some Pineapple events in Baltimore? Or at least you've maybe brought some people from Baltimore down to DC. But I think it is amazing how long it can take to really find your footing in a new city, and even kind of like you said, of recognizing, oh, it's actually really important and really awesome to have friends around and community around, which is again underlining that point of why in Pineapple it's so important that you do the offline events. And why that's so huge.
You know, I have a bit of a hot take on this as well, on self-care.
Well, let's hear it, girl.
All right. I think I've realized, and I'm just going to speak for myself. This is how I feel. This is my kind of experience and personality. But I think I've had a lot of time for self-care in the past 6 months, because I am like, you know, I'm working remotely. I'm home a lot. And I think that actually is like causing a little bit like too much self-reflection.
Yeah.
And I just feel sometimes with self-care, you hear people say like, just say no, like cancel your plans, like have a night to yourself. And for me, I think sometimes what I need is actually the opposite. Like what I need is to get out and to be with other people, to like not be so consumed with my own thoughts. And so I think that's the biggest takeaway for me this year, is really like knowing when I need social time, and that can really in itself be a very strong form of self-care.
Yeah, I really love this. This is something I've been slowly coming to as well, because I think I'm more on the introverted side of the spectrum, and given my work, I'm in front of a lot of people and working with a lot of people through the day. And so sometimes it's like, no, now it's time for me to stay home. I have to, like, no more. But realizing like, oh wait, actually that doesn't always make you feel better. Like it's sometimes, yes, definitely you got to preserve energy and rebuild energy and all of that kind of work. But sometimes it's like actually only seeing people when you're working isn't always healthy either. And it can be really good to get out and see people and enjoy time with your friends.
Right. Yeah, and I'm definitely also towards the introverted side of the spectrum. But yeah, I totally agree with you that like having back-to-back meetings all day doesn't mean that you're like socializing per se.
Oh, yeah.
And so like that side of your soul like needs to be fed sometimes. I mean, listen to your own intuition. But I also think like, you know, the self-care revolution is also like causing people to like flake out on plans. And yeah. So if you actually like need, you know, you need a glass of wine with a friend and you just like need that to be nourished, like tell your friend that you need that. Otherwise, like they might cancel on you. I think we live in like a pretty flaky time. But just like be very upfront and say, you know, I really am like craving some like one-on-one time with you. And just be like very real and honest with your friends so that they know how to like take care of you.
Yeah, I really love that. And I think that's such a great point because you're right. Sometimes in this self-care revolution, it's like, say yes and then say no.
Right, exactly.
Like, no. Like, if you want to say no from the beginning. And I always think of Derek Sivers. You know, he has a famous article called Hell Yes or No. And that unless it's a hell yes, you should say no, because it's way easy to be like, I'm trying to think of something that I would like say yes to without realizing how much I would hate it. Like, yes, I'll go to King's Dominion in a month because it's a month away. I'm not really thinking about it. But like, as I get closer and closer to that date, oh my God, you bet I'm going to be pissed off that I said yes. Right. And so it's the point of like, no, if you actually know you have a really busy day on Friday and you don't want to get Thursday night drinks, then say no from the beginning instead of waiting until Thursday night and then saying, oh shit, no, I have a lot of stuff on Friday. Or whatever else it is.
I'm going to look up that article. I really like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Hell yes or no. Derek Sivers. It's Sivers. If anyone else wants to look it up. You might also like this. He wrote a great book. It's something like 40 lessons from owning a business or something like that. But it's kind of a book of lessons from owning his business. And it's fabulous and wonderful. And I reference it all the time because one of the huge things that he mentions is like, it gets back to what you were saying. Like you created a business because you saw how you wanted things to be done or you saw something in the world. And so why would you create a business and then run it like everyone else's? Why would you create a business and then run it without being in alignment with your values? And instead, like you're creating your world. You get to decide the rules. You get to decide how you want to run things and how you want to do things. And I think about it all the time when I'm like, oh, I have to do X, Y, or Z. And it's like, really, you don't. Right?
Yeah.
So I'm a big, big Derek Sivers fan.
Awesome. I'll definitely check it out.
So I'm curious if there is a habit that you've dropped in the last year that's made a big difference in your life. Something that you've gotten rid of that has helped you feel, live, be in a better place.
Oh my gosh, that's such a good question. I guarantee I'm going to like think of the best answer an hour from now when we're not recording anymore. But
I can always like add this is Atara's actual thing.
That said, I'm definitely like joining the like blocking technology revolution.
Yeah.
Last week, I've been trying to like train myself to do this more and more. But last Sunday, I decided to like leave my phone at home,
nice.
Which was really cool. I ordered a watch last week.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, I might be alone in this, but I literally don't own a watch because I look at my phone,
yes.
But I want to be relying on my phone a little bit less, which is hard because I need it for Pineapple, because so much of our work is online, yeah. But I think even just like the feeling of not having my phone on me and like being a little bit kind of reclaiming like idle time has been something I've been trying to train myself back into doing. I've definitely been in the habit of like, you know, if I'm out to dinner with Benny, my husband, and he like goes to the bathroom, I like reach for my phone and scroll. And I like don't need to do that. I think I am craving the feeling of like not being entertained or like stimulated. I really like this like feeling of being alone with my thoughts. And so leaving my phone at home has been a practice that I'm trying to bring into my life.
I love that. I know it can feel like such a little like revolutionary act. Like, yeah, my husband and I, we walk somewhere, like we're going like a block or two blocks away from our house. I'm like, I'm going to just leave my phone and see how that feels. And
yeah.
Okay. Let's do this. And kind of something else, I'm going to just recommend all the books because I love it. But Cal Newport, he wrote this beautiful book called Digital Minimalism. And something that he talked about on a podcast I was listening to him on is he was saying, you know, I totally get it. You have to use social media or this kind of stuff for your work. But then use it like a professional.
Right.
Right. Like using social media for your work usually is not idly scrolling. I mean, maybe it is for like, for example, if you're looking at the pineapple or like the pine four tag, but that can be done intentionally. And that can be done like, oh, I'm going to spend 15 minutes now looking at the pine four tab and seeing, you know, what we want to pull for our feed, right? Like that's approaching technology like as a professional rather than being used by your technology. And I really loved that because it's been a conversation even my husband and I have been having of like, well, what could I get rid of or what do I not need or what is extraneous, and realizing, well, you know, the scrolling, like you said, like if someone that I'm having dinner with goes to the bathroom and I'm scrolling through Instagram, like that's not really professional Instagramming. No. That's not really doing anything for my business at that point. And I mean, maybe you've even experienced it too, because in that moment, let's say someone did DM you or you have a comment, you're not in a brain space to respond. And right. So then you have to leave it and then you have to remember it later. And it actually just creates this cycle of having to think way more than you would have if you just hadn't opened Instagram when you shouldn't have, right?
Mm-hmm. Totally.
So that's something I think about a lot.
Yeah, and I mean, like most technologies, you know, they're not all bad, obviously, and like it's a double-edged sword. I definitely am grateful. I'm grateful for Instagram because it's helped my business tremendously. It's helped reach all of these women who care about the content that we're creating. And I think that's really powerful. I just, you know, to your point, I don't want to be used by technology. And I think that's where I'm trying to draw the line now.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Last question.
Okay.
When do you feel most successful?
When do I feel most successful? That's also such a good question. I feel most successful in my life when all things are in balance in a way that, when all things are in balance, when things are looking up for my business, when I have time to invest in my friendships and my marriage, when I have time to walk my dog and cook and be with my family. I will say as a caveat that like, I'm not someone who believes that like women can have it all or like anyone can have it all, at least like not at the same time. Mm-hmm. I think it is kind of an elusive idea of like, being successful, feeling successful. I think in addition to like when I'm feeling balanced and can do all of these things at once, I feel the most successful when I myself internally, like when I feel happy. And a true test for that for me is like even when things are going wrong, I still feel like optimistic and joyful. That's when I know that I'm like, I feel like mentally balanced. I feel like I'm rambling a little bit, but the truth is that, like, I think the feeling of success comes from within, and that there isn't really anything like external that happens that makes me feel successful.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're so good. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I like want a philosophy book written by Atara.
I know.
Such good. Yeah. You said it at the beginning, like self-reflective or like really self-aware. It's like, I would give you that. Yeah.
There's a lot to unpack. But you know, I think about an example as it relates to like my team at Pineapple. Like, mm-hmm. I don't feel successful if Pineapple is doing really well and my team is unhappy.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. I think about success as it relates to like not just myself, but the people around me working in harmony towards like a joint purpose and really feeling mm-hmm. like we're on the same page, on the same team, working together to support each other and to grow our movement.
And it's kind of it makes me think of like win-win situations.
Right.
And kind of to circle back to kind of what we talked about at the beginning, you know, a lot of, not to get super political, but like a lot of these conversations that are happening right now in our political sphere, we're talking about win-lose. And this idea that if a refugee comes or if this person comes or if this specific thing happens, then other people have to lose. And it's like, what if we didn't think someone had to lose in order for another person to win?
Right.
And what if instead, like, you can be happy and your employees can be happy and the people that come to your events can be happy. And like all of these people can be satisfied. No one has to like sacrifice, meaning unduly sacrifice, obviously you have to work, et cetera, but like unduly sacrifice in order to make something good happen.
Right.
Yeah.
No, exactly. I think like the kind of conventional picture of success is like when someone is powerful, mm-hmm. in power, when someone is like, you know, at the top of their game at the expense of other people. And I really don't view success that way. To your point, I think I feel ultimately successful when everything around me is working in synchrony. And you know, we ask our team members all the time, like, are you feeling successful right now in your role? And if not, like, how can we help you to feel that way?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not about like hitting metrics or results. It's like about fostering a vibe of like unity to achieve a joint like mission together. That's what we care about.
Thank you so much, Atara. This is like such a beautiful conversation. I just truly appreciate you taking some time out to share like your amazing wisdom with us.
Well, thank you, Sam, for inviting me and for fostering this conversation. It feels so good to be so aligned on so many philosophical things in our modern world. So thank you for talking to me.
You're so, so welcome. I hope you have a wonderful Wednesday. Enjoy some time with your dog.
You as well. I'll talk to you soon, Sam.
Bye, darling.
Bye.